This is a public service announcement, sponsored by Just Blaze and the good folks at Rockefeller Records.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is Ho, Ho, H to the O-V. I used to move snowflakes by the O-Z. I guess even back then you could call me CEO of the R-O-C. Ho, fresh out the frying pan.
Welcome into the week 5 edition of the Naked Bootleg Podcast. Evan Lazar here, as always, with Adam Kirchin. And Adam, a quick week this week. I don't like these Thursday night games for us. It's a quick turnaround.
Yeah, it is a quick turnaround, but it's an interesting week for sure, coming off the Carolina game, and it's another AFC South game for the Pats, and it's sort of another interesting test for the defense, which is still struggling.
Yeah, coming into this season, a lot of talk about the Patriots' schedule last season being really easy. This season, we kind of knew going in that they were going to have a much tougher road and play a lot of better quarterbacks, and the NFC South was a big part of that, having that on the schedule. Obviously we got Cam and Drew Brees out of the way already, and now you welcome Jameis in, who we'll get to a little bit later, our thoughts on Jameis, but then you got Matt Ryan coming up in a couple weeks too, so it's kind of a gauntlet of former MVPs, a couple of them at least, going on here. But that is what it is. But let's talk about the struggles on defense for a little bit. Obviously, it's the number one subject in all of New England right now, is what the heck is going on with this defense and with this secondary. And from my perspective, I think that, there's no real reason to panic in terms of the secondary, if you ask me, because most of these issues, I think, will probably be ironed out. And if they're not ironed out, then, that's on the coaching staff and the players for whatever reason to not be able to fix these, communication issues that are happening out there.
Well, I feel like, Gilmore is at the center of a lot of them. He didn't have a great year last year with the Bills either, if you go back and look at it. So you have to wonder exactly what he's really good at other than bump and run man coverage. What exactly is it that the Patriots can do with him?
What exactly was it that they saw in him? I think that that's a really interesting question, and maybe it's too early to ask that, but it's really interesting to see kind of – I wish we could go inside Bill Belichick and Nick Caserio and that team's head, that side of it, and see, why did you hand this guy a $65 million contract to have him, come in here and play a lot of zone and play a lot of off coverage and play a lot of stuff that he's not – necessarily going to excel at.
Yeah, and it's weird because you look at some of the plays that broke down, it looked like they were man coverage, but he would just cover the wrong guy or something like that. It was very strange. He just mentally hasn't caught on yet. And on the one hand, you can say, all right, well, it's a mental thing and those things are correctable. At least he's not physically incapable of playing the position. But on the other hand, you're thinking, all right, well, this isn't the second week of the preseason or something like that. These issues shouldn't be there, really. When I talk to the players and we talk to the players in there, there seems to be a collective sense of frustration, not with Gilmore per se, but with how the secondary is playing. The guys in the secondary seem to be frustrated with how they're playing. They seem to be frustrated with, the amount of blown assignments. They don't think it should be this way at this point. They basically just sort of have this sense that, why is this still happening? So, this week is another good chance for them to prove that they've taken a step forward, but It's
if they don't, boy.
But it's one of those things where it's really bad, and it's almost like, you know, when you talk to Harmon or McCourty, they've never really seen that level of incompetence in the back end with this team.
Right, and you know, just to walk through what's really going on here, you know, it looks to me, in Carolina, you have to give them credit, because I really thought that their offensive game plan from a passing standpoint was really good, and they knew exactly what the Patriots secondary was having issues with, and they attacked it, you know, over and over again, which is to their credit. But mainly what's happening is a bunch of formations and stacks are a nightmare altogether, but mainly it gets even worse when a guy motions in late to a bunch or into a stack, and then they have that 1 or 2 seconds right before the snap to work out who's covering who. And at the moment, the communication is not going the way that it needs to go, and they're leaving guys, you know, stuck with two guys on one and leaving a guy wide open. And that's what, you know, it's really, you know, you have to have these things already pre-programmed in your brain is almost the issue, because you really don't have enough time to work this out pre-snap. You know, when a guy motions across, or McCaffrey on that screen pass motions across, you know, this is 1 or 2 seconds before Cam Newton snaps the ball. It's not enough time to, you know, point fingers and figure out who has who and all that type of stuff. This is something that in training camp and in practice, you know, should be second nature to these guys. Like, okay, it's a stack, it's a bunch, this is how we attack it. It's a screen, this is how we attack it. And, you know, it's just not happening right now. And I think that with Gilmore, you know, it's mainly he needs to understand the approach. And early on in the season, with a lot of these stacks and pick plays, they weren't doing anything creative. They were sticking with their man. Now it seemed like in Carolina, they tried to play more of a box coverage, and they tried to, you know, pass guys off and stuff like that, depending on which way they were going. And what was happening was, is Carolina was doing a good job of disguising, you know, is this guy going in? Is this guy going out? And then at the last second, they would go in or out, and Gilmore would go the wrong way.
Yeah.
And, you know, as the outside corner, it's Gilmore's responsibility to take the outside guy. The guy that goes the outside the quickest, he's supposed to go get that guy. The big one to Kelvin Benjamin was really the one that makes no sense what he was thinking whatsoever, because Kelvin Benjamin clearly goes outside and he just, you know, follows the inside receiver that Eric Rowe had. It's really weird to me to see, you know, these things that should be pre-programmed, you know, coming back to haunt them a month already into the season, and we keep seeing it week after week after week. And you know, but then again, you know, I see a lot of stuff this morning that's like, do they need to go sign Darrelle Revis? Do they need to trade Jimmy Garoppolo for, you know, defensive help? You know, stuff like that. And it's like, that's not the issue, I don't think, at least. I don't think that it's talent. You can say, you know, if you could go trade Jimmy for Joey Bosa, that might help, obviously, but that's not going to happen. And, you know, I think that the talent in the secondary, especially, we can get to the talent in the front seven. You know, obviously, I think we both agree that that's subpar, but the talent in the secondary, at least, is there. It's just that they're not on the same page right now.
Right. I think it's, if you're going to pay a guy like you paid Gilmore, what, 5 years, $65 million, you're making a big mistake if you're feeling like it's a talent issue at this point. It really can't be. You have to work with what you have, because you have quite a bit invested in this. I just think, you know, I kind of look forward at this and say, all right, well, you know, Malcolm Butler is probably gone at the end of the year as a free agent, which leaves you with Gilmore and Rowe as your top two corners, which is kind of a scary proposition, because right now your best corner, even though he hasn't been lights out this year, is Malcolm Butler. And your secondary is playing horrible. So, you know, that's the situation they're in. But right now, as of right now, their only recourse is to fix with what they have. And that basically, to me, really, it just comes down to getting Gilmore's head on straight with this stuff. And it's not all his fault, but a lot of it is. So if they can do that, then I think they should be better. Will they be a shutdown unit? I don't know. I don't know if I see that here. But they can be better. I mean, of course they can be better. They're worse than the league.
There's right no now. Way you can be worse. So. But
when they could be worse, then that would be quite something. They really have to show, you know, Gilmore how to just do basic stuff. I mean, this isn't rocket science. When Harmon was saying last week, he said we've simplified it down to as simple as it can be. You're looking at Gilmore right now, and you're saying, "All right, it's time to catch up." You know, these aren't extremely complicated schemes or anything like this. This is find your man, stay with him, and don't go the wrong way. You know, and Gilmore's been going the wrong way.
Yeah, I agree completely that it's time for that someone to take charge back there. You would think it would be, you know, one of the veterans like Devin McCourty or Harmon who've been around for a while and just, you know, really iron these things out with Gilmore. And McCourty and Gilmore have had a lot of issues when they're on the same side of the field all season long. I mean, you can go all the way back to the Tyreek Hill touchdown, you know, to remember those. So those two have not been on the same page since day one, it seems, which is interesting. And, you know, It's tough to watch, but I think that these things should all work themselves out to at least a better standard than it is now. I mean, this is god awful. So by midway through the season, week 17 especially, you know, this stuff at least should be presentable. And they shouldn't be having these huge breakdowns. And if they get beat in man coverage, they get beat in man coverage. But that's not really what's happening. You know, Gilmore. When you watch him out there and he's just, you know, doing his job and asking, you know, to just cover a guy on the boundary, he looks fine. It's when he has to make a decision in a couple of split seconds that he starts to get confused. But let's move up, to the front seven and the pass rush, because if you want to talk about talent, I think that this is where you look on this entire roster for a lack of talent. And we've known this all along. This isn't new, information here. But I think that one thing that we saw with Cam was that, or with Carolina in general, is that when you don't have a pass rush and then you have the breakdowns in the secondary, it makes it that much easier for the quarterback to pick them out. And, Cam is literally just standing there and throwing lollipops to wide open Kelvin Benjamin and Fozzie Whitaker on screen passes. And in these types of things, when there's no pressure, and there isn't a lot of pressure right now for the Patriots, especially timely pressure, it just makes it really easy on the quarterback to just stand back there and wait for somebody to uncover. And that's kind of what I'm seeing. And I think that there's a couple of things that I want to run by you, see if maybe this could help, but what are you seeing right now at the pass rush?
Yeah, I'm seeing only spurts of it, you know, like I'm only seeing like inconsistent spurts of pressure, you know. In the Saints game, obviously Dietrich Wise was consistently in the backfield, had a great game. And I sort of expected more from Trey Flowers this year so far. I think, I expected Trey Flowers to be, you know, in every game sort of dominant, and for him to build off last year. I haven't really seen that. There's no real guy on this defensive line who you say, okay, every game you can count on him to be in the backfield all day. And they're really that, you know, I just don't feel like, as far as the pass rush is concerned, they have established anything consistent, you know, and now it's there in spurts. You know, I mean, at the end of the Panthers game, it would have been there twice in huge situations, except for that Gilmore penalty. But you know, that doesn't count. So,
which was a horse bleep penalty.
Yeah.
The one on Chung, I understood, like, Chung, what are you doing? You know, pulling down a guy like that in a big spot. But the one on Gilmore was as ticky tack as it gets on a third down in the fourth quarter of a tight game. That's, yeah, I can't get on board with that. But I think that I agree with you. And Trey Flowers hasn't been, you know, he hasn't taken that next step into that elite pass rusher territory. But him and Dietrich Wise are really the only two guys that they have right now that are getting any type of consistent pressure. Yeah. And basically when I watch it, it's if a guy doesn't beat his man one-on-one, then there's no pressure.
Right.
And it's not necessarily that they're not blitzing enough, because they did blitz a little bit, but it's just that nobody that's blitzing or the guys that have their hand in the ground are beating guys. And if you don't have Trey Flowers and you don't have Dietrich Wise or you don't have Dante Hightower beating a man one-on-one, then there's just no pressure. And it's interesting because I kind of alluded to this last week, but just I think that they don't really scheme anything up front to make it harder on opposing offensive linemen to block these guys. It would be one thing if they still had a guy like, like a Chandler Jones, for example, not to, go back down that road, but a guy that can really beat somebody, beat a left tackle one-on-one, on a pass rush snap. They don't have that right now. And instead what they're doing is they're just letting it not happen. And, I would like to see them get more creative with some stunts, some twists, move guys around a little bit more, do something to kind of spice things up here where it's not just four down linemen pushing the pocket and rushing the quarterback together in a not so successful way most of the time.
Yeah.
And yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that would be good. I think they have to do something because really it's just not there. I think they have to accept at this point that they can't really generate the type of pressure they're looking for with just four guys. And even like you said, with the stunts and stuff like that, anything would be better right now. It's just very vanilla. And that sort of creates a comfort in the pocket that will end up hurting you, especially with the way the secondary is playing right now.
Right. Unless you have a guy, like I said, unless you have a guy like a Chandler Jones or a Von Miller or one of these sack artists that is just going to, have a game just beating a tackle off the snap, then these types of, non-exotic, just everybody kind of rush and push is just not going to get any pressure against even an offensive line that's just presentable. I mean, Carolina doesn't have a great offensive line. Houston doesn't have a great offensive line. But those guys are not going to, get beat by Trey Flowers' first step. I love the guy, Trey Flowers. I love the player. But it's just not his game. He's a tactician with his hands and he's great at other things, but he's just not a screaming off the edge guy. Neither is Hightower. Hightower, who I think that, I watched this game and I saw how inept guys like Kyle Van Noy and Alondon Roberts are to blitzing. And, those two guys blitz and they get stood up by the running back in blitz protection, like pretty much every time. And they get nowhere. And I wonder, this is my theory, what if they move Hightower back to inside linebacker some more? Because I really think that they have what they want in the front four from, on pass rushing situations, especially with Flowers, Dietrich Wise, Adam Butler, and then Larry Guy or Branch or whoever is the, the second tackle that they want to use. And I think that they have what they want in terms of pushing the pocket and doing it that way. What they're missing in big time, and last year, the number one pass rush action that they had was firing Dante Hightower up the middle.
Right.
That was their best weapon in the pass rush, was blitzing Hightower and expecting a running back like Devontae Freeman to pick him up and cover and block him, which isn't going to happen when Dante Hightower is coming down. Obviously he's only played a couple games, so maybe that's coming. But I just think that is the most effective pass rush, pass rush action that they have on this team right now. And they're just putting him, you know, on the edge, which is, we discussed this all offseason. I thought it was a good idea. But really what's happening is that Hightower is not a natural pass rusher. And yeah. And he's getting blocked far too consistently, easily by right tackles. And it's just really not, it's not there in terms of the moves. I mean, even the sack that he did get was more because Cam ran into it because of the pressure up the middle instead of Hightower. I mean, he tried to put a spin move on the right tackle, but it wasn't really much of a spin.
No.
And I think that the best pass rush weapon that they have is firing Dont'a Hightower up the A-gap and B-gap and just blitzing the heck out of these quarterbacks with him. And they can disguise it. They've done it in the past where they only want to rush four, they drop a defensive end and they rush Hightower up the middle, or, you know, do different things like that if they don't want to blitz on it, you know, every snap, to use Hightower in that way. But I think that that is truly their best option in terms of getting pressure on the quarterback.
Yeah, I think it would work. I think, I think the Hightower on the edge experiment hasn't really yielded enough results for you to say, okay, this is going to work going forward, and, you know, this is something that works. So, you know, maybe moving him back would be a good idea. I don't think there's an easy fix here with their current personnel, as one of the things I'd say is, I feel like, you know, with what they have, they do have to get creative, as you'd say. So, you know, I think, you know, unless there was some personnel move that brought a real pass rusher in here, I think they're going to have to blitz more. They're going to have to be more creative. They're going to have to send more guys when they need to on a passing down. I'm sort of, you know, they've faced guys who are mobile enough to escape it and make you pay for when you, lose your gap discipline on rushes and stuff like that. But at this point, you know, what do you have to lose, basically, after what you've gone through? You know, these guys have been in the pocket at times. These guys have escaped the pocket at times. They're really not – the Patriots really haven't been able to do anything to affect the passer on any of these plays. So I think basically it's going to come down to, you know, can they throw more blitzes at guys? Can they stunt more and all that? It's not one of those easy fixes, though. Like I said, it's changing things around this much, especially when the defense as a whole basically is such a mess. It's gonna take some adjusting to, and they're not playing. You know, I'm not sure if we're going to see it this week, because I feel like, you know, even though Tampa Bay hasn't thrown up huge amounts of points every week, I feel like they're dangerous enough to hurt the Patriots just as much as some of these previous offenses have, with Winston and some of his weapons. I mean, they've got a lot there. And there's a lot of potential. So I'm not sure if this is the week they're going to try and do it. Maybe they'll run it out there when they have a little bit of a weaker opponent, but it's something that they do have to at least look into and try at some point, because what's going on right now isn't working.
Yeah. My guess is, and obviously just guessing here, but is that because it's a Thursday night game, we're probably going to see them try to iron out the communication issues in the secondary as much as they can this week and just kind of go with what they have right now and what they've been doing. And then when this 10 days, you know, goes, they have this long break now until the next game, maybe we'll see some adjustments, you know, into next week of what they can do to kind of scheme things up a little bit more exotically in the front seven and do stuff like that. But I just think that the emergence of Dietrich Wise of being a really good player, it looks like, it would allow Hightower to kind of move around again a little bit And they did hit a little bit against Carolina. He did play a little bit inside, but he didn't really blitz. He dropped into coverage a few times. I would like to see him blitz more up the middle, because that's really what that was their bread and butter last year, was bringing Hightower up the middle, and then he would force the quarterback one way or the other and make those easier sacks on the ends. Let's move on to Tampa Bay. We can talk about the defensive struggles for hours, but moving on to the Bucs, who are 2-1 at the moment, and ugly win last week, I would say, against the 0-4 Giants. Barely won that game on a field goal. The good news is that we have the 31st ranked defense in the Bucs coming into town to face the 32nd ranked defense in the Patriots. So the numbers would suggest that we got a shootout on our hands, but I think, you know, we know better than to just expect things. So
I feel like Tampa's numbers are a tiny bit skewed from that Minnesota game when Case Keenum just went nuts on them. I think they have a better defense than their numbers suggest, just because I like their corners. I think Hargraves and Grimes are good players, even though Hargraves hasn't played that great this year. I think their linebackers are all good young players, and Gerald McCoy is obviously one of the best defensive tackles in the game. On offense, I think they're a sort of an underperforming offense right now, given what they have. I don't think DeSean Jackson has really gone off yet for Tampa, even though, you know, he's an explosive player. They've got good tight ends. I wrote about that a little bit in today's notebook. They've got Cameron Brate, who's obviously excellent, and O.J. Howard had a 58-yard touchdown catch against zero coverage, it looked like, against the Giants. He was super wide open. But he's a good blocker, and he's a good receiver, as we saw at Alabama. He's sort of a well-rounded guy and can do a little bit of everything. Tremendously talented guy. And Mike Evans, of course, at receiver, is a huge target. He's fast. Just a matchup nightmare for anybody. Belichick joked yesterday on, you know, having a bigger corner on him, and he said, "Well, if we needed to have somebody match up size would have to put Wise on him." They present a lot of matchup problems. Their running backs are decent. It's Doug Martin supposedly back this week. And Jaquizz Rodgers obviously has had his moments as well. So, you know, it's one of those deals where, I mean, we went into last week thinking the Panthers had a sort of a terrible offense, and then they explode against this Patriots defense. And you can see the same thing happening with the Bucs. I mean, they haven't really put it all together yet, but, you know, against this Pats defense, they could really light them up. Because they do have the pieces, you know, and I think it all comes down for the Bucs on offense is whether or not Jameis Winston can make the right decisions and not throw into dangerous windows, which he tends to do. He sort of trusts his arm so much to fit it in there that he'll throw bad interceptions. If the Bucs are able to, the Howard touchdown was sort of a scary example of, you know, what can happen against this Pats secondary. I mean, they dragged him across to the left side on when everybody else was actioning to the right, and, you know, the Giants just lost him.
Yeah.
He was wide open. There was nobody close to him. And it was one of those things like, oh, yeah, I've seen this happen 3 or 4 times already this season. More than that with the Pats. So, I think I counted either 4 or 5 plays for the Bucs. I think it might have been 5 of 31 yards or more against the Giants. And big plays have been killing the Pats. So from that respect, you know, this is going to be a huge, good challenge for the Pats, even though the Bucs' offense really hasn't taken off yet. I think it's good enough to do so against the Pats.
Yeah, defensively for the Bucs, you know, they are banged up, which could, you know, play a big factor, especially on a Thursday night game. It looks like Quan Alexander, Lavonda David, TJ Ward probably won't play in this game. They might. They have an outside shot of playing, but especially in the short week, it's unlikely. They all missed, I think, at least Quan and Lavonda David. I'm not sure about Ward. I think all three of them missed the Giants game. So that's really a lot of what's going on with them defensively, too. Those are two of their starting linebackers that haven't been in the mix, you know, because of the injury. And then obviously Gerald McCoy is, as you said, you know, you got to circle that guy and know where he is on the front at all times. He's as good as he gets. And I do think that that their secondary is beatable, especially their safeties. That's really why they brought TJ Ward in, is because they didn't have great safety play. And, you know, Hargraves has been struggling since he got into the league, but he's a super talented guy that I think will figure it out eventually on a consistent, you know, snap-to-snap basis, but not on a consistent basis. He's good, and he's kind of hot and cold. And when he's hot, he's playing really well. And Brent Grimes is still chugging along somehow, you know, into his 30s, playing a tough position to play late into your career. Yeah, and he's really still very, very good. So I think that matchup with him and probably Cooks is going to be a good one to watch as well. As far as the Bucs offense goes, you know, a lot of weapons all over the place, especially if Doug Martin is gonna play at a full force, is a full go, which he might not be because he's been suspended, and you know they kind of usually ease those types of guys back into gameplay. But if he's a full go, then you really have a really good offensive skill set, position players, and OJ Howard I really liked. I think the tight end position is you know, usually slower to you know, getting up to speed with the NFL game than some of the other positions are. So maybe he will take a big, you know, year two leap instead of being a real big factor in year one. But he's kind of one of those, you know, do-it-all type tight ends, as you said. A lot of Greg Olsen comparisons for him in Alabama, which I think is not a bad one. And looking at Jameis, and I wanted to talk to you about this for a few minutes here, is, you know, Jameis really hasn't taken that next step. And right. a lot of people talk about how great Jameis is and how the positivity and the vibes that you get from him are everything that you could want in a franchise quarterback, you know, just a leader, just a natural leader. And we saw that at you know, Florida State, obviously, as well, that this guy just is a natural leader of men. But in terms of on the football field, you know, just making far too many bad decisions still. Decisions that, you know, a quarterback now in year three really should start getting rid of. And this is the time of a quarterback's career where they start to take that next step. You know, guys, you can go all the way down the line with guys that in that year two or year three range, you know, really started to find their rhythm in the NFL. You know, just recently top draft picks that you can think of, you know, guys like Cam Newton and Matt Ryan and Stafford and Derek Carr. You know, year three was really the big year for them. And Jameis, it just hasn't happened yet. It's early still. But I think there's way too many, you know, inconsistent decision-making out there. And also, you know, they have a really explosive offense with Mike Evans and D-Jax and all of that. But it doesn't really seem like they have a consistent, you know, where are we going to go to move the chains on third and 10 type option. And that's not because they don't have the receivers. They got plenty of receivers. I just don't know if Jameis is taking that next step mentally to really figure this thing out. And you can't be the player, I don't think, because he's just way too talented to still be doing these types of things. So it's kind of got to be a combination of him and Derek Carr that are just not mixing right now. But when you watched Hard Knocks even, you saw how much Derek Carr was getting on him for his decision-making. You know, just can't do this, certain things. And he threw a really bad pick in one of the preseason games that Derek Carr just reams him out for on the sideline, right on Hard Knocks. I was surprised that they even showed it. And, you know, it was terrible. It was a, you know, beyond rookie mistake. And, right. You know, those types of things, just if this Bucs team is really going to start I guess is my point, is if we're going to start taking them for real, and I've heard about, you know, here come the Bucks, the last couple of years, a lot of hype surrounding this Bucks team, a lot of talent on both sides of the ball, and Jameis is the X factor.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like before he got hurt, Mariota was sort of ahead of where Winston was when it came to those two quarterbacks from that draft class. And there's been other young quarterbacks that have been taken over the last 3 years where I feel like they've taken the step and they've become accurate and efficient and dangerous. Whereas, you just look at who Winston has in his arsenal right now. There's no excuse for him to not be putting up huge numbers and for this offense to be putting up the type of numbers that, 27 to 30 points a game. He's got DeSean Jackson who can take the top off and is really just a weapon whenever he goes out there. He hasn't really done much yet with the Bucks. I mean, Evans is incredible. I mean, Evans is one of the best receivers in the league. Brate and Howard are excellent when it comes to tight ends. You just
they have Humphreys too as their third receiver who's not too shabby either.
And so it's one of those things where you look at Winston, he takes a lot of chances, and at a certain point you have to be a little bit conservative sometimes, and not either check down or not throw into coverage where it's just too tight or there's two guys there. His decision making really hasn't been that good, and he's thrown a lot of interceptions in his career, and he's still not at that point yet where you feel like he's figured it out, but it shouldn't be that way. He really, I don't look at him and say, oh, he's not a smart quarterback. I feel like he knows what he's doing. I feel like even when he just came into the league, and when he was at Florida State, he made mistakes too, but like that system there, Florida State prepares you for the league as well as anyone in terms of, they don't dumb it down. They have the quarterback making a lot of these decisions at the line and reading the defense. So he should be prepared and know what's coming from an NFL defense when he gets back there. And I just feel like, he hasn't made that leap yet. And then at a certain point, you wonder if the guy will. If he is capable of taking that next step, but talent wise, he's too talented, and I believe he's got a good enough football IQ to be able to still have a game here and there where he's just almost an unstoppable force. And so, like, if you do give him open looks and if you give him, a defense that isn't going to pressure him or if there's breakdowns in the secondary, I still feel like he's the guy that will take advantage of that.
Yeah.
So, comparatively in this game to the Patriots, I still feel like he can have a big game, especially if these, mental breakdowns continue and the pass rush doesn't really get to him. And one of the things Daron Harmon was saying, which is true of Winston, is he'll scramble, but he'll scramble to throw. He won't scramble to run. So, that's dangerous. I think some of the difficulties the Patriots had against Deshaun Watson was he would scramble and then find somebody downfield, and those scramble rules are difficult on a secondary. And like we were talking about that game was, you can only cover a guy for so long. You can't do it for 7-8 seconds, And right. So if Winston's doing that this game and the pass rush is slow to get to him again, then, I don't care how bad his decision-making is, he's going to be able to find an open receiver.
Right, and I agree. I think Winston has a chance to have a huge passing game in this game, especially if the Patriots get up early, like they tend to do. You could see a 350, 400-yard game from Jameis Winston. I wouldn't be shocked with the way that the Patriots defense is playing right now. But I think that it's interesting because you look across the league at some of these younger quarterbacks, and Jameis is obviously still in that category. And I always come back to Jared Goff right now, it feels like, because Sean McVay is just awesome. He's yeah. just a great offensive coordinator, a great offensive play caller, obviously the head coach now. But he's a great offensive schemer. And you look at what he does with Goff to make Goff succeed and make it easier on Goff. And even what you look at the Patriots and what they do with Brady to give Brady easy throws and easy shot plays. Down the field and stuff like that, where it's schemed open, it's designed open. Don't see that too much in Tampa. And that's not really necessarily calling out Derek Carr. I just think that the players that they have, like a guy like Mike Evans, is toss it up and let him go get it. You know, he's not Chris Hogan or Cooper Kupp or one of those guys that is a possession receiver in terms of, you know, he's just going to be schemed open and find ways to get open and he's going to be reliable and catch the ball. Mike Evans is a freak. And I think that Jameis, you know, has to at some extent throw it up there and just hope that he catches it. A lot of the time that means throwing it up there into coverage. And a lot of the time that means it getting picked off. I think that, when you look across the league at quarterbacks that are probably less talented than Jameis, you know, the main thing that you see is that these coaches consistently make it easier for them to have easy completions, easy gains in yards, easy yards after the catch too for receivers. So it's not just, you know, air yards. Those types of things are, you know, I just don't see that happening in Tampa. In Tampa, I see we have a lot of playmakers on the outside. We're going to run all these guys deep, and Jameis is going to toss it up to them because he's got a cannon. that can work. Obviously, it has worked in certain circumstances. But in order to be a playoff team that has a consistent offense that you can count on in big spots, you really need to have some of that, you know, those design schemes. And I think guys like Jared Goff kind of get knocked a little bit for having the scheme be so friendly towards their skill set, but that's what's supposed to happen. You know, that's what Tom Brady has had for 18 years now, and the reason why he's going to the Hall of Fame and has 5 Super Bowl rings is because he's been able to be as good at possible at the system. And right now, I just don't really know what the Bucs system is offensively, other than, you know, we have Mike Evans, we have DeSean Jackson, we have some tight ends, and we're going to run them deep and have Jameis hit them. And that's like kind of their offensive game plan almost. Maybe I could be wrong. Maybe I haven't watched them enough. It's just the way that I see it. Whereas when I throw on the tape of the Rams, you know, Sean McVay is finding ways to get the ball out of Jared Goff's hands and easy window throws. You know, these guys are wide open. Some of the time, and they're running into passes with, you know, wide open yak opportunities too. Just don't see it as much in Tampa. I think that this is a really interesting game because it's another game, obviously, that the Patriots should win, but also has the opportunity to be a huge game offensively if they lose some of these receivers on the back end like they've been doing. So, you know, it's tough. Like, you don't really know what to expect from the Patriots now, which is hard to believe because it's the Patriots. Yeah. But you just don't know. Like, you don't know what team is going to show up tomorrow night, which is, you know, scary.
No, it's, you know, in one way it's more interesting because, you know, yeah. it's, you know, what are you going to get? So, yeah, I think Tampa is, you know, they're not as good as the Chiefs or, you know, like that, but I think they're definitely better than New Orleans. Even though, you know, Tampa's got some guys out on defense, I still like their defense better than that. Some of the teams they've played, not Carolina per se, but or Houston even, but I still think this is a good Tampa team. I don't think they're necessarily as good as people have been hyping before this season. I was on that train too. I thought this was sort of a next step type of year for the Bucks. But right
it kinda
now,
it has to be. Like, if it's not, then I think Dirk Koerter is going to lose his job.
Right, and you know they need some of those guys on defense to come back eventually, because I think their defense is pretty good when it's healthy. They've got good pieces. So, you know, I think it's just going to be one of those games where, you know, you're not going to see perfection on either side. You're not going to see dominance, I don't think. I don't think you're going to see the Patriots come out here and light up the scoreboard and shut down the Bucks for four quarters. Like, I think it's going to be another sort of back-and-forth game. And it's going to come down to the fourth quarter again and whether or not the defense can make a key stop. And, you know, I think in all these games except for the Chiefs, and you didn't really have to see it against New Orleans, but in these fourth quarters, you can trust that Brady and the offense are going to put the Pats in a position to either tie or win.
That's a good thing about where they've come from. The Chiefs game is that the offense especially is playing four quarters of football at this point.
Yeah, so and that's why we haven't really touched on it as much, is because, you know, we sort of know what they have, like we were talking about earlier. So so I think it's going to come down to whether or not the defense can finally make some stops before they before it's too late. You know, I feel like you don't want to always be coming back, and I feel like it's going to be one of those back and forth games, and it'll come down to whether or not in the fourth quarter the defense can say, all right, we're going to do something for the offense that we haven't been able to do before, which is, you know,
get a stop, force a punt. Maybe not wait until 7 minutes to go in the game to finally force a punt on defense. I mean, at least they did force that punt, and then they forced that punt, and then the Patriots march down the field and score on a short field because they forced the punt, you know, deep in their own territory for Carolina. I think the Patriots took over at, like, the 50-yard line. They score a touchdown. They tie the game. It's like, this is what happens when you play complimentary football. God, you know, really frustrating game to watch. And when you rewatched it on the film, it wasn't any more pleasing than it was when I watched on Sunday. I haven't been that frustrated watching a Patriots game in a long time. That was as bad as it gets for me personally, in terms of just, you know, inept secondary communication. Like, this is like, you know, college football stuff that they're not figuring out here. This is not, you know, anything like, you know, Gilmore's over the, you know, not as talented as you know he thought he was, or Butler is actually, you know, a scrub, or and this is just like basic football 1-on-1 type stuff.
Yeah, so we'll see if we can get back to it. I think they win this week, but I don't think it's going to be dominant. I think it's going to be within a touchdown or 10 points. So I think the Patriots for now have to be prepared for these types of games. Until the defense really catches up, and I don't think it's going to get there this week. I think it's going to have to take. I think it's going to have to take some time. These issues are a little too deep.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Well, what do you got going on? Obviously, quick turnaround, but.
Well, let's see. I'm putting together a notebook for Thursday that I collected from yesterday's open locker room. I'm going to look. I talked to Mike Gillisley a little bit about how the running game might have turned a corner a little bit against Carolina. We just didn't really see too much of it because of the circumstances of the game. They're coming back for most of it.
Right.
But I think, you know, maybe, you know, and Tampa's pretty good against the run so far. So it'll be a nice test to see exactly where they are. And then after that, you know, just the normal stuff. No Sunday feature this week because they're playing on a Thursday night. And it'll be interesting, I guess, to, you know, to see exactly what questions remain after this game. I think it's going to be really interesting to see if these same problems persist.
Yeah, I almost think in some respects for the players, it might be kind of nice for them to be playing a quick week on a Thursday after a game like that, especially defensively. Get right back out there and show that that's not you is really what they can do, and it gives people like us less time to crap on them, and yeah. It's another game. You have a whole week in Boston, and you turn on 98.5, it's gonna get ugly. Today I had coming out in the Herald a article on the trenches on both sides, the offensive line and the defensive line, defensive pass rush mainly, and just how that's, in my eyes, been a little bit more of a troubling issue than these communication breakdowns in the secondary. I think that stuff will work itself out. I think they have a little bit of a talent issue, especially in the defensive front. So I broke down some numbers from Pro Football Focus on all sorts of stuff about, pressure percentages and how many pressures each guys are giving up on the offensive line and stuff like that. So check that out. Quick turnaround. So probably no film breakdown. Maybe I'll get to one tonight to read it in the morning. But yeah, that's pretty much it. And then watch the Bucks game tomorrow night. Pats Bucks in Tampa. And hope that they're not 2-3 when they come out of tomorrow night. But that's all the time we have for today. We will have a show recapping the Bucks game, hopefully sometime early this weekend or early next week. So look at that, and then we'll preview next week. Who are they playing in Week 6? I can't, like, I'm blanking for
right. Dude, now I'm blanking too.
Right, double. I like had it all teed up, and then I blanked. But anyways, we'll get to that when the time comes as well. But for Adam Kirchin, Evan Lazar, and they're playing the New York Jets in Week 6. Okay. So if they can't win that game, then we're in big trouble.
Right on schedule to have the Jets come.
Yeah, that's actually fits perfectly into what we were saying about them maybe putting some new stuff in and trying it out against a not-so-good team. Yeah. So maybe we'll see that. But again, for Adam Kirchin, I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening.